I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Camp San Luis Obispo, California. Come along and join me for a visit with Major Eric Chaya. And he is in the Special Forces, and his specialty, believe it or not, are cows and agriculture. Tell us about your project. You're TDY here from Monterey, correct?
That is correct. So I do work at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey. Before I worked here, I was a student, and I wrote a thesis with my thesis partner, another Army major, Ian McAlpine. And we wrote about implementing regenerative grazing on Department of War land.
How did this all start? What was the seed?
That's a really good question, and pun, I'm sure, was intended. So I was in Africa, and we were doing what's known as a joint combined exchange training program with the Malawi Defense Force. So our partner force was their parachute battalion, and we brought them our recommended training schedule, what we wanted to work on. You know, it's a discussion with your partner force, and they were going to be deploying to the Congo, and so they wanted to work on utilizing their machine guns. It was something they were really, really wanted us to work with them. We said, all right, let's talk about where you guys are at. Crawl, walk, run methodology. We're going to start in the crawl phase. And in the crawl phase, we need line of sight. So could you take us to your machine gun range? We want to just verify that, you know, when we're laying on our stomach utilizing the machine guns, we can see the targets. And they kind of looked at each other and said, sure, we'll take you out to our range. And what we saw was chest to shoulder high grass in a big open field with some boulders off in the background, which was our berm. And we said, wow, we'd really like that line of sight we talked about so we can see the targets and give you guys good feedback. They said, not a problem. Now, I looked around and I didn't see any tractors. There was no green paint out there that we have on our bases. And so I thought, well, I'm not really sure how they're going to do this, but they said all they need is 2 days. But in the spirit of trust but verify, we came back the next day just to check on it, see what they're doing. And we saw kids with sticks moving cows across this open area. And they were mowing it with locally adapted methods. And I thought, wow, what a neat relationship, this symbiotic relationship that existed between the local military and the ranchers. And the military land wasn't necessarily there for grazing. It was there for training, but the cattle were a tool for land management. The way we were grazing our cattle at the time, and we had a little homestead in North Carolina, and we're moving our cows around with what's called polywire. It's a little electric fence. It's a wire that's plastic with metal filament, and you put it on, if you can imagine, an extension cord rail. So it's very light and mobile. And I thought, wow, well, we could be utilizing cattle as a land management tool on our bases as well, utilizing this style of grazing. And so that was kind of the light bulb moment that was in the back of my head, you know, that showed up in Africa. And then when I went to the Naval Postgraduate School, they really want us to use operational experience to write about something that's very relevant. And at the time, we were really talking about installation resilience was a big topic, and how do we increase readiness? How can we ensure that the warfighter is, you know, more lethal? And I thought, wow, what if we improved our training areas utilizing this type of management, which I'm sure we'll discuss, you know, the suite of benefits that we've seen here at Camp Slow over, you know, we're approaching 2 years now here.
Interesting. One thing I didn't ask you specifically about, but range management to mitigate the threat of fire.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I think that'd be huge. Camp Roberts, same.
Absolutely. We talked with the commander of the California National Guard, Major General Smiley, and he said those, you know, big 5,000, 8,000 acre burns that they have on California military land are nights that he doesn't sleep very well. And so if we could implement something that removes a lot of that fuel load while improving the training areas, that's huge. Here at Camp San Luis, we have an impact area that's traditionally burned.
And that's where the range is for...
Yep, that's where people...
Mortars and...
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there's you know, kind of a backstop, a shorter berms, and then there's a much bigger hillside that it falls in the impact area. Bullets really aren't going up there, but they could, you know, a stray tracer round could go up there and hit a patch of oxide grass, and then we'd be in trouble. It'd be a lot of fire. So Cal Fire typically does a, you know, they shut down the ranges for 2 weeks. They go out there with the whole crew. I mean, as you know, they don't just light a fire and walk away. There's a lot of work that goes into pre and post. And they came out, they did an assessment, and they said, hey, the way you guys graze this, we don't need to do a burn.
Wow.
Which was, yeah, that was great. It was a win for us. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't shut down the ranges while we grazed back there. We were able to move the cows according to, because of that control we have with that little polywire I was telling you about, we didn't need to shut down any training. So we kept the ranges going. We removed the fuel load. Those 2 weeks came to the, you know, hey, we actually can open it up for training. We don't need to shut this down. It's a big win.
The cattle that you run here, they're not yours.
No.
You partner with a rancher. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think grazing on bases is not a novel idea at all. And so there's been grazing here on Camp San Luis for many, many years. It was part of the Jack Ranch, you know, before it was Camp San Luis. And the Madonnas grazed it. Now the Simonians graze it. And Mark Simone has really been the partner of choice. When we came here with this proposed idea, we said, you know, Mark, this is your lease. These are your cows. We just want to implement this type of management to prove that this could work on a military installation, that this would be value added. This wouldn't be a training detractor. I mean, the way we're grazing really is a paradigm shift in how you manage cattle. We'll probably get more into that. But Mark could have easily said no, but he let us do it. He would probably be the first to tell you that he didn't think it would work. Because
what was his resistance?
Well, you know, a lot of people think there's no way these cattle are going to respect that little wire. It's just one single wire with some step-in posts. If you've never touched that wire yourself, you'd think it's a pretty janky little setup. You know, it doesn't really look like it could control heavy, you know, 1,000-pound cows with, you know, 2,000-pound bulls that are just not going to respect that thing. And without the proper training, that is true. Without proper training, one or two will hit it. It'll kind of lose its tension, and then before you know it, the cows are walking over it because it's laying on the ground, shorting out. But if you train them properly to it, which is what we did here, able to respect that wire. And now we can go, sometimes it's not even on, you know, and the cows just
don't even. Because they've been conditioned.
And we've built trust with the herd, too. They know that I just need to wait a little bit, and they're going to come out here and move us to fresh grass, you know.
Tell us a little bit about, you have the collar on the cows, and so you can control them remotely from drones and satellites and whatnot. Talk to us about that dimension.
Yeah, we're incorporating some virtual fencing, and that requires the cows to wear a collar. I think if folks are familiar with dogs with you know, a buried wire, that's their fence. This is not a buried wire. This is controlled. This is actually through cell towers is what we're using. And as long as you have service through any number of providers, because they can tap into all sorts of different provider networks, and that you can control from your phone. And so instead of stringing out polywire and step-in posts, because some of this terrain is restrictive, that, you know, I have poison oak right now, but some of the areas that we don't really want to go into, that virtual fencing is incredible, because I can just drag and drop the virtual fence posts and the cows, which also that.
How do you communicate with them? How do you get the proper response?
Yeah, so the training, it goes back to the training. And I think the cows pick up really quick on it, probably quicker than we do. But they get a tone, so there's an audible tone that tells them you need to turn left or right because you've approached now the boundary. And they'll get that tone. There'll be a period of time where if they continue forward, they will receive a pulse, an electric pulse from the collar.
It's not a shock, but...
It's not a shock. I mean, they don't like it. They've learned to... I mean, it's pretty incredible to watch some of them. Some of them have figured out their niche in the herd. And they know that they can ride the edge of the fence line they'll reach over with their head, they'll grab a bite, they'll hear the tone, and they know that if I just turn my head for a minute, it'll stop, and then they'll turn their head right back, eat, wait for the tone, turn, walk down the fence line. So they've figured out where some other cows, they hear the tone, and they say, oh, I'm getting away from that. I'm going back into the middle of that paddock, where others are pretty comfortable riding the fence line.
Interesting.
It is. It's amazing to watch.
Mm-hmm. And the bigger picture, you're working on a demonstration project here at Camp San Luis Obispo, but it's applicable basically at any military installation, right?
Right. Yeah. I always like to say, I mean, there's 26.9 million acres of Department of War land, but not every acre of that is suitable. But just about every base has an area mm-hmm. where this would work. And you know, we
have they reached out to you or you to them?
Both. Okay. Both have happened. What was really powerful for our, you know, our little grazing initiative here, we call it the Regenerative Grazing Open Air Lab, the RGOL, here at Camp San Luis, is back in September, we met with Secretary Hegseth and sat down just like you and I are and talked about this program and how it improves training areas, how it cuts costs. And then what's been really exciting to see, and you've probably seen them, Tom, here walking around, but there's right now we have six veterans who are out there with us who are learning how to do this. So when the other bases call like they have and say, can you do what you're doing there, here? We say, we can, sure, we can, we have the people in the pipeline in order to expand.
That's really cool. Back to grazing here, I remember one thing one day you were telling me about were some of the weeds and some of the peripheral growth that you conditioned the cows to know.
Yeah, I've been conditioned to never call them weeds, and so is our crew. We call them forbs because they are really actually beneficial. You know, they're nature's signals, indicators of what's going on under below what we can see. And so what we have out here a lot is bristly ox tongue, curly dock, Indian teasel. We have species that people don't really like, but what we're seeing is because we have created what's called non-selective grazing, the way we mob these cows up. So imagine, you know, we have a couple different herds here, but one of them, the smaller herd, is about 45 head, and we move them on to, you know, a quarter of an acre for a few hours. And everything in that little quarter acre is going to get eaten, trampled, defecated on, mashed into the ground, utilized. Whereas, you know, that's typically just someone sits on a tractor and mows back and forth over and over again, and then expects the non-desired species to just magically go away, and they don't. So, yeah, we've seen them become quite the food source. And I always tell people that, you know, we turn those weeds into ribeyes.
Canadian thistle?
I mean, we've seen Italian thistle out here. We have a lot of that purple star thistle. Mm-hmm. We don't have the yellow star thistle like some of the other bases do, but at a certain time of year, it is pretty delectable. You know, they'll eat it.
So if they're young and pliable, yeah.
Yeah, but we're also seeing even when they're not, even when they're not. And so if you can wad them up, we can get the effect we want. We can get them trampled. We want them trampled down into the ground. We want them turned into organic matter. We want the microbes to be able to consume them. But if they just stand there and grow and nothing impacts it except once a year it gets flail mode, that's not the conditions to create the plant succession that we want to see, where we can have a sponge down there. We can have this ecosystem below ground that functions in order to promote, you know, we'd love to see perennial. We'd love to see perennial grasses return down here and not just annuals.
Mm-hmm. Talk to us about soil for a moment. You know, we talked a long time ago about buffalo and how they're kind of the premier soil conditioners, but the cows, you have them partly because of rotation and whatnot.
Yeah.
Being a beneficial conditioner of soil.
They absolutely are. And I like cows because we can so easily manage them with that single wire. And there's people who are doing it with bison. We just haven't got there yet. We haven't tried that.
That might happen.
I mean, I think it could. You know, there's bases like Pendleton that has a wild herd of bison that are a training distraction. Mm-hmm. You know, I was on the phone this week with a pilot who said, "Oh, I remember when I was doing gunnery out there, I just had to sit and hover and wait for these bison to clear off the range."
Oh, interesting.
And which probably cost a lot of money. And so what we say in our program is, well, we have control of those herds. We're able to move them and maneuver them. We put them at a location where we want them for how long we want to achieve the effect we want. But what I thought was pretty interesting, back to your question about soil, our discussion with Secretary Hegseth, and then it was Lieutenant General Leneve, who's now, he's a four star General Leneve in the acting Chief of Staff of the Army, was how often we referred to soil in that conversation.
Oh, interesting.
And so General Leneve was talking about how at Fort Bragg, where he was a commander of the 18th Airborne Corps, their drop zones are either burned or mowed. And he said, when you hit the ground there, it's like hitting pavement. He said, but when I commanded at Fort Polk in Louisiana, there was this wild herd, albeit unmanaged, but a wild herd of horses that would graze the drop zones, and we just really didn't need to mow them. And we had far less injuries. And so I wasn't even thinking as injury prevention. And then, you know, everyone pipes up in the room. They're like, oh, because healthy soil is like a sponge.
Right.
And we're like, yeah, and that's what it all, you know, the name of the game we talk to our guys out here is like, we want to slow down the water. We want to hold on to it. And that's what we're seeing is, you know, when we have more armor, we have more cover, we have less erosion, but we also hold on to that water longer. And so we can extend the green season. We've only, you know, we've been at it for 2 years, so we haven't seen the extended green season. We're told, you know, it's about 3 to 5 years before you start seeing that hockey stick graph where soil knows it's kind of, you know, under new management. But, you know, when we have healthy soil, we have healthier plant species. I like to say you're not what you eat, you're what your food eats. And so if our food, if these cattle are eating nutrient-dense grasses, forbs, legumes, and then we're consuming that, you know, that's a win-win. That's a win for us. The cattle are performing better. We're eating more nutrient-dense protein. And what we'd love to see is that this is eventually in our commissaries. This is in our dining facilities. You know, this is installation resilience at its best, where we have this huge protein source walking around our bases that's not just there in the way, it's actually improving our training areas while then supplying us with protein. You know, it's like we have this, that to me, that's a resilient installation.
A long time ago, you told me about part of the genesis for this direction had to do with Special Forces Green Beret embedded in remote areas where they don't have access to food. Mm-hmm. And working with the villagers, whether it's Afghanistan or whatever. Talk to us about that dimension and how that fits in.
The best example we really had was that parachute battalion who we worked with in Malawi, who not only used them as a range maintainer, mm-hmm. but that was our food source. They had partnerships that were long withstanding with those local herders. You know, I think a lot of people were concerned about how well we would eat in Africa, and we ate very well. I think I was one of the few people, I gained weight there. I mean, it was just a really neat relationship that existed between the local military and the local livestock owners. And so it was mutually beneficial for both of them. And that's where, you know, when we have these remote areas, they rely on each other out of necessity. But out here, it doesn't necessarily need to be out of necessity. It can be just out of a mutually beneficial relationship. And so as we, you know, California's 3.8 million acres of military land, and we have the smallest domestic herd the United States has had since 1951. It's been decreasing by a percentage each year for some time. And so to me, this is a win-win for local producers as well as for the military, who can then contribute. You know, if you listen to Secretary Rollins and Secretary Hegseth talk about food security as national security. And so if we want to increase the domestic herd to make us less reliant on other countries, this is a great way to do it. The management needs to be there. I think that's the that's the key piece, because I've talked to a lot of folks who, as we're talking about grazing cattle on an installation, someone may sit back and cross their arms, and I say, you know, I'm guessing, Sergeant Major, at some point you were on a firing line trying to utilize some weapon system of yours, and you weren't able to because of grazing. And he's like, that's right, that did happen to me. You know, ranges were shut down because of cattle. And I always say that's the opposite of our management. That's right. The antithesis of what we're talking about here. It's very, very managed. We know on what eight acres they are on that day. It happens in synchrony with range control, not against it. So we are able to, again, complement the training, not work against it.
I come on base, and every time I go, oh my God, he's got the cows over by the warehouses today.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we call it the hospitality herd. And so people can go up there. They're a real docile group, and we can put them right up against buildings or just flat, like the parade field, for example. That was just a big wide open area that, you know, someone has to sit on a mower for a couple days and just go back and forth. And we said, you know, we could probably cut down on the amount of time you're mowing if we were to graze it. And so it's helpful there, but I think it's particularly more helpful on areas where there's rocks or, you know, a log's fallen over or somewhere that they're about to go mow, and we can help them discover those obstacles with cattle versus them discovering it with a very expensive piece of machinery.
Have you been able to come into an area and mow it down to the point where the guys on lawnmowers did not have to come there?
Yeah, we have been able to do that. I think, you know, one interesting conversation I was having with Colonel Winsor, who's the garrison commander here, is, you know, grazing, we're not always going to have the same look as you would with a mower. It's going to have, you know, it would look like a mosaic. You know, there's going to be certain areas that they hit harder. There's going to be certain areas. And frankly, we strive for we call it the one-third rule, where we graze a third we leave behind, and then another third is trampled, manured, left alone.
What's the point of leaving a portion behind?
Right. So we say it takes grass to grow grass, and we also want to be able to leave habitat for other creatures. So we know we're removing enough fuel load that's not really a concern. But we don't want to scalp it. We don't want it to look like a golf course out there necessarily. We want it to be functional. And so if we graze everything down to the same specifications, we're not leaving a lot of armor for it to slow down the rain, for it to, you know, if we hit all those species at a level where the roots start sloughing off, we can put those plants into shock. And so there's certain areas where we do want to leave some behind. You know, California's kind of a unique growing. This area is a Mediterranean climate, as you know, and we want to leave some of the older grass behind because we don't want everything to be this green lush when it hits that flush that's almost too rich for their stomachs. And so they'll need something to balance, some roughage to balance their diet.
So they'll seek that out.
They will. Yeah. People think cows are dumb. They're incredibly smart. They understand it. I think that's what we've taught them with that non-selective grazing we're talking about, is now that they're eating the mustard, they're eating that thistle, they're eating the bristly ox tongue because they know it's actually beneficial. They feel good. There's medicinal properties. There's antioxidants in some of these. Some of them have higher protein than alfalfa. But before, they didn't really want it because, I don't know, they didn't like the texture. They never had learned to eat it. So now we have this herd walking around here who will seek out
intelligent cattle.
They know. I mean, they absolutely know what's good for them.
We've been talking about this a couple years now.
Yeah.
Where are you at in the continuum of the project right now, and where do you see it going in the short term beyond Camp San Luis Obispo?
We have a really unique area here with Camp Roberts right next door. We have Fort Hunter Liggett north of here. It was probably a month ago when the Fort Hunter Liggett commander, Sergeant Major, his DPW and environmental and range control all came here to Camp San Luis to do a site visit versus just hear the presentation. They wanted to see it in action. So that was pretty neat. We brought them here. They met all the veterans who were out here training. We actually had a couple gate guards who got off shift, and they love to come out here and learn and just be part of what we're doing. So I think for the Sergeant Major, that was the most impressive thing. He said, I don't know what you got going on here, but I want some of this passion that you have with these soldiers who are sitting here over at Fort Hunter Liggett. Those folks made a really lasting impression on him, which was neat.
Do you have guys that run cattle, civilians that are motivated and want to join up with you?
Not really. I mean, this really is a unique way of grazing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say it's like antithetical to the kind of the Western motif of, you know, cattle are out there doing their thing, and then you need to grab 20 people to all get on horseback and hooping and hollering, gathering a big gather. We don't do that, mm-hmm. you know, because we go out there and we're on four wheelers and we blow a whistle and the cows come where we want because we got them trained. They know, they see that extension cord reel. They see us reeling it up and they go, okay, that's where the new gate is today. I'm going to start walking toward that guy.
That's really fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it's just what you can train them to do. You know, mm-hmm. It's positive association. They know that we have a good relationship with them. And so one interesting thing that I think, you know, local civilian ranchers do appreciate seeing is just the temperament of these cattle. Mm-hmm. And so they see us, they notice that we're not grass. They don't run away. They just look it up and then they say, oh, he's not blowing a whistle, so I better just go back to eating, put their head down and eat. Whereas often, you know, you'll see some cattle who you get close to them and they're moving over the next ridge line to get away from you. And so it's pretty neat to see that these cattle are so docile, which then allows us to really be observant of them. We're using them as a tool, 100%, but we're also making sure that we're matching their nutrient requirements with what the land has as well. And so we're looking for their condition because they are our tools. We want them to be performing very well. We don't want them to be skin and bones out there. We want them to be fleshy, to be productive. So we're certainly looking at that as well and seeing. That'll be the next episode as we get Mark in here and talk about what he's seen with his herd. And he speaks about it way better than I do. Mm-hmm. But it is impressive, and it's been a cool relationship because I'm so much like focus on the land. And Mark's like, this is the herd. You know, the herd matters too, Eric. We got to slow down. We got to slow things down. We're calving right now. We can't be moving them this fast. And so we definitely help balance each other out.
How does the partnership with the local rancher work financially?
He's a lessee here. And so this model that we kind of came in as like a bolt-on to this to see if
it would whether work. Or not you were here, he would be here. Yep.
But that's not the model we want going forward, because there's a lot of bases that don't have grazing because they see it as an impediment to training. And so this new way we're looking at it is the veterans that we train out here would get land access to one of these installations, one of these military bases that want to implement this type of grazing. And then that veteran would be able to work with a local livestock owner. We're not advocating at all for the Army, Navy, Marines, Space Force, Air Force, anyone to get into the cattle business. We want the local ranchers to benefit from this additional land access. But what we do want is there are a lot of veterans, you know, 160,000 service members leave the service every year. And a lot of them want to get involved in agriculture, but it's a really intimidating field to get into. You know, Blake, who's Mark's son, he's a fourth generation rancher. I mean, he probably knew more at seven than I'd do at 37 because he was just grew up doing it. I did not. And yeah. So we offer, it's called a skill bridge. It's your last, you know, 90 to 180, depending on your branch, days of service where you can go do on-the-job training. And that's the majority of our folks that are out here right now are on skill bridge.
So these, they're like last 6 months or whatever.
Exactly. They're getting the OJT, on-the-job training out here,
hands-on. But they're still immersive. In the service.
They still are. Yeah, just like me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still in the service, so are they. But this is their transition period where they're getting to discover, do they want to, one, be involved in agriculture? Do they want to be around grazing? And then furthermore, it's a, you know, do they want to be one of the folks considered for grazing of Fort Benning, for example, down in Georgia, who there's, it's easier to pull a string than push one. And so they're definitely one of the bases that are pulling for this type of management.
How interesting. When you called me the other day, you had something on your mind you specifically wanted to share. Was that about the upcoming event?
Yeah. We have an event here on the 3rd and 4th of June called, so we're hosting it on the base. It's run by Noble Research Institute. It's called Profitability Essentials. And, you know, I as I talked about Mark and I being able to balance each other out, they always, I've heard you can't outgraze a bad business plan. And so, you know, what inevitably comes up when we start talking about this is like, how financially is this panning out? And that's what we want to discover during this course. And so it's open to any local farmers or ranchers. It doesn't matter if you are a producer of strawberries or you run a cow-calf operation. They're going to work with you on numbers. They're going to help you discover ways to, one, you know, evaluate what type of enterprises you have and the profitability of those, and then some tools that you can take with you. The course is $200, I believe. It's been reduced thanks to quite a few partners, the California Farmer Veteran Coalition, E. Shepherd, they're the folks who, the collars that we're using, the Coastal Resource Conservation District, Grassroots Carbon. I mean, there were a lot of sponsors for this, which was really cool, and to me kind of...
So you've had a good response.
It's been a great response, and Noble, the folks, they reached out and they said, you know, the course is next week, but we expect a few more signups, but they said this is the highest signups they've had in any of their classes in California.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're based out of Ardmore in Oklahoma, and they do a lot of work in that area, but they really want to expand out here to California some more, because I don't think people realize how rural, I mean, even San Luis is. I mean, we're surrounded by ranches.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's definitely not surrounded by cities and urban. Yeah.
No.
We're spoiled.
Yes.
Yeah, we are. So anything you want to add?
I just want to thank you, Tom. Thanks for, I mean, every time you're around, you do such a good job of introducing me to folks who are interested, folks who are interesting. I just always learn every time I'm around you. So I just appreciate you. I appreciate your podcast.
Well, I appreciate that. And I keep learning a lot from you. It's very cool.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Thanks
for having me. To learn more about your world, you have a go-to website.
I have a LinkedIn page that I put updates on. That's called the Regenerative Grazing Open Air Lab. I need to be better about it. And, you know, sometimes you put my head out there and I'm just like, I just keep moving cows. But I'm going to do a better job of posting some more updates. But you can at least learn there. You can message me. You could, engage with me there. That is on LinkedIn. There is a webpage called bootstoroots.org, and that is if veterans are interested in participating, they can find us through that webpage as well.
How cool. And then close it, and my name is, and your rank and where you're based.
My name is Major Eric Chaya. I work at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey and run the Regenerative Grazing Open Air Lab here on Camp San Luis Obispo.
Awesome. Thank you, Eric. What a pleasure. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We'll see you out in the field.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.